QST from W1AW, the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio in Newington, Connecticut. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for July 20th, 2016. The ARRL Aries Audio e-letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries e-letter, which is compiled by Rick Palm, K1CE in Daytona Beach, Florida. I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland, and my audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland. Here are the headlines for this month. Pikes Peak Aries provides major support to International Hill Climb. Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon, Run to Remember. And Letters, a proposal for an Aries standard headset. But before we get to the news, the e-letter editor, Rick Palm, K1CE, writes, "We hope that you value the Aries e-letter as your source for current events, after-action reports, tips, and developments in the amateur emergency disaster communications community. Can you think of anything we could do to improve the newsletter? We would appreciate your opinion. Please send me an email with your thoughts. Here are a few questions I have. What is your age and license class? How would you characterize your level of involvement in amateur radio public service operating? Are you highly involved, only become involved when you have time, or your public service involvement is minimal? Are you involved in other aspects of amateur radio, such as DXing, contesting, and so forth? How often do you read the Aries e-letter or listen to the audio version of the Aries e-letter? Are you an ARRL member? In addition to your amateur radio involvement, are you also employed, or do you volunteer in public service, such as police, fire, and so forth? What was the single most important reason for getting your amateur radio license? Was it so that you could be involved in public service? Because you're fascinated by radio communication and technology? Because you were urged to do so by your employer or a volunteer group? Because a close relative has his or her ham license? Or was there another reason? What is the primary reason for reading the Aries e-letter or listening to the audio version of the Aries e-letter? Is it to find out what other hams are doing in public service? To pick up operating tips? To pick up technical tips? To learn about state and federal actions that may impact amateur radio public service? Or is there another reason? How may we improve the Aries e-letter and the audio version of the Aries e-letter? Add more profiles of public service operations? Add more relevant technical discussions? Add survival tips? Add more operating tips? Add more news about FEMA and other government activities? Add news about served agencies? Or other? If you care to answer these questions online, you may go to www.arrl.org/Aries-e-letter, and e-letter is all one word, dash survey. That URL again is www.arrl.org/Aries-e-letter, all one word, dash survey. Or you may send an email directly to me, Rick Palm, at k1ce@arrl.net. I'll repeat that email for the address for Rick Palm. It's k1ce@arrl.net. And thank you for subscribing to the Aries e-letter. So far, one survey respondent wrote, "My main feedback is the lack of lessons learned from the various events reported. It's great that the overall result of these events was successful, but hams can almost always see ways to improve their response next time. Most of those of us who have been in Aries for some time know what we should do. It is what went wrong from which we can learn. It is those lessons learned that could be helpful to everyone else, Keep up the good work. Another replied, the ARIES e-letter should provide some coverage to the National Traffic System, or NTS, as both ARIES and NTS are public service entities of the ARRL. Some thoughts from survey respondents. Contesting as Training for Public Service Webinar. A free ARRL webinar titled Contesting as Training for Public Service, hosted by Ward Silver, N0AX, will take place on Sunday, July 24th from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, or 0 hour to 2 hours UTC on July 25th. All are invited to join the audio slide presentation online or via telephone. Mr. Silver said, think of contests as a ham radio fitness center. Public service teams are always looking for enjoyable activities to improve operator skills. Just as sports provide good physical exercise, contests are great at developing radio skills, and both are a lot of fun. Mr. Silver also pointed out that contests originated as a way to hone traffic handling skills and develop an effective station. The presentation will be available via YouTube following the webinar. In addition, ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager Mike Corey, KI1U, is seeking anecdotes from radio amateurs who have activated an Emergency Operations Center, EOC, for a bona fide contest, such as the ARRL November Sweepstakes or a state CUSO party, but not ARRL Field Day, a set, or Skywarn Recognition Day. Mr. Corey described what he's looking for is just a brief overview of an event, the results, number of participants, and interesting outcomes. You may send your anecdotes to Mike Corey via email at mcorey@arrl.org. mcorey is M-C-O-R-E-Y, one word. So let me repeat that email address. It's mcorey@arrl.org. Please stand by. We'll be right back with the news after a station break. This is the ARRL ARIES audio e-letter for July 20th, 2016. Now, the news. Pikes Peak ARIES provides major support to International Hill Climb. If this were a video, a baritone-voiced announcer, using an ominous tone and deliberate articulation, would lead off the narration, over 12 miles long, with 156 turns and 4,720 feet in elevation gain. Well, that's how it might begin. June 26, 2016, saw the 100th anniversary of the Pikes Peak, Colorado International Hill Climb. The hill climb was first held in 1916 and is the second oldest motorsports event in the United States. 100 vehicles would make the race from the starting point at 9,390 feet above sea level to the 14,110-foot summit. That is, if they made it to the top. Not all do. For many, a good run is under 10 minutes, though two made it in under 9 minutes this year. This race would be impossible for organizers to conduct without an army of volunteers. Though the race occurs the same day as Field Day, members of Region 2, District 2 Colorado ARIES, otherwise known as Pikes Peak ARIES, were glad to once again support the hill climb. 27 amateur radio operators were deployed along the course to provide vehicle tracking, alternate communication, course status, weather observations, and other functions. One operator comes from Texas each year to support the race, while most of the others are locally based. The radio calls started off slowly. Once there are multiple vehicles on the course at the same time, the pace of radio communications and messages becomes lightning fast. The pace is so fast that only tactical calls are used, with FCC IDs announced every 10 minutes to stay legal. With vehicles launching from the starting line as frequently as every 60 seconds, this is not an event for a novice operator. It calls for strict net discipline, use of very specific terminology, and being able to pick out hard-to-read vehicle numbers as they go past at speeds of over 100 miles per hour, noticing something is amiss with the vehicle, like a leak, loss of power, and so forth, and being ready to quickly adapt from normal race pace to a full emergency in seconds. Led by veteran race operators Don Johnson, K0DRJ at Net Control, Al Glock, KC0PRM, as a liaison with race officials, and Dan Martin, KD0SMP, as the mission coordinator, the team handles many hundreds of calls during the event. Listening to Net Control, K0DRJ, work, one can only imagine an operator with four hands. He is not unlike those operators who can keep 10 calls in their head as they work a contest pileup. When a racer slammed into a guardrail and needed to be helicoptered off the course, the ability to get the initial report to race officials and to maintain control of the net was a testament to the skills of all the operators. This could very easily have been a life-or-death situation. The amateur radio operators also were the first to notice debris and fluid on the course. They alerted race safety officials, who closed the course until the hazard could be cleared. There were no fatalities this year, and the racer who was evacuated by helicopter appears to be doing better at this writing. The weather on America's mountain can be temperamental. It can be more than 70 degrees down at the start line and 40 degrees at the summit. Even though it was the end of June, the start of the race was delayed as snow and snow melt was cleared from the top of the course. Afternoon storms can build up quickly, dumping rain, hail, and snow on an area in just a few minutes. Lightning is always a concern, especially above the tree line and at Devil's Playground, so named because of the propensity for lightning to jump from rock to rock. With just a few racers left to go, snow pellets, rain, and hail began to fall. And while the precipitation was nowhere near the reportable conditions for the National Weather Service, it was a huge concern for the racers. Last year, a storm cell moved in during the race and dumped so much hail that the snow plows could not get the road cleared, and the race was shortened to only 6 miles. This year, the only car not to go to the summit due to the weather was an exhibition vehicle driven by a quadriplegic, which stopped halfway up. The Pikes Peak International Hill Climb makes for a long day. Getting in queue at the gates at midnight to head up the mountain at 2 a.m., finding positions in the dark, being completely self-sufficient for the duration, and not coming down until after the downhill parade usually lasts about 17 hours. The mountain and Colorado weather often throw curveballs at us. Spectators often do things they are not supposed to do. Racers crash and vehicles break down. Through it all, Pikes Peak Aries and associated amateur radio operators perform magnificently, providing a vital volunteer service year after year. We were excited to be part of the 100th anniversary of such a prestigious event and look forward to next year. Our thanks goes out to John Bloodgood, KD0SFY, the Emergency Coordinator for Region 2, District 2, Pikes Peak, Colorado Aries, for this fine report. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for July 20th, 2016, and I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Please let us know if your repeater is airing or if you are listening on your smartphone to the audio version of the Aries e-letter by sending an email to kz3ab@arrl.net. Please include the day, time, location, repeater call sign, frequency, and any sponsoring club. That email address again is kz3ab@arrl.net. You may also find us on Facebook or Twitter by searching for ARRL. Thank you for your support. We're going to pause now for a few seconds to allow repeaters to identify. Please stand by. We'll be right back. Up next we have Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon Run to Remember. April 26, 2016 saw the 16th running of the Memorial Marathon for the destruction of the Mara Federal Building and the loss of lives that occurred in 1995. Since its first run in 2010, the role of the amateur radio community has grown as the marathon has grown. After the first few runs, and as the number of runners increased, the organizers realized that a better communication system needed to be developed. In the initial years, contact between the start-finish line and various points on the course were attempted by cell phone. That proved to be unreliable because many areas were not able to contact the control base. Therefore, event organizers and managers turned to radio amateurs for more reliable communication services. As the marathon grew from several hundred runners to today's more than 25,000, and as additional courses and runs were added, the communications requirements have become more demanding, complex, and critical. The marathon itself consists of a full 26-mile course with a half marathon of 13 miles, as well as a walker's course and a children's course. They all start at different times from the same point and return to that point, but use slightly different course layouts. In addition to the single runners, there is also a relay course for team participation. The coordination of radio communications along the various courses, as well as between the police, fire, and EMS service for the city of Oklahoma City, has grown into a complex but interoperable system. Primary communication is handled through the Office of Emergency Management, or OEM. The OEM is tasked with overseeing cooperation and coordination among all involved city, county, and state organizations, as well as keeping the marathon officials informed of any emergency situations and conditions and traffic that may impact the runners and the spectators along the marathon course. There are several radio amateurs assigned to the OEM base of operations who are responsible for getting messages out to on-course directors to ensure public safety. Working down to the next level, the amateurs establish stations at several points on the course. Other operators are assigned to the medical tent, also called MASH, located at the start-finish line. This group keeps the medical teams informed of any emergent situations on the course involving runners and spectators. If injury occurs, the MASH is informed of the person's condition and if evac transport is needed. This information is radioed to the MASH from operators assigned to the first aid stations positioned along the course. Communications for support and gear, or SAG vehicle dispatch and coordination, are handled through the SAGnet control point, located near the start-finish line. Each SAG vehicle has an operator on board who maintains contact with the SAGnet. Each vehicle has an APRS radio station aboard and active so that SAG control can look at a computer screen and determine which vehicle is closest to where a pickup is needed. This system has been used successfully for the last several years. One rule for SAG pickups is that all runners picked up must be transported and seen at MASH to ensure their health and safety. New for this year, the amateur group was asked to provide additional operators to help move supplies, water, and ice among the various checkpoints. Last year, some checkpoint staffers ran out of ice, water, and other supplies, while others had too much. A water net is established to cover this issue, and it worked successfully. 90 operators were deployed this year, with more being needed. 10 primary repeaters were employed, with many simplex frequencies and backup repeaters available in case there was a failure. Lessons learned. All communication systems remained open and viable over the event's course, thanks to advanced rigorous direction to all operators that the various nets were strictly controlled. Net and operator discipline prevented informal crosstalk and mixed or missed messages, thus promoting smooth and reliable traffic handling with no garbled or duplication of messages. This was particularly important for emergency and priority messages and calls for the SAGs to pick up transport runners who needed assistance and keeping the MASH informed of the runner's condition en route and the estimated times of arrival. We also returned to the practice of using runner bib numbers for identification purposes to reduce confusion and duplicate calls and ensure that the correct person was picked up at the right station. There was one incident where the station calling for assistance did not give the bib number. There were two runners that needed assistance at one station at the same time. One runner left the checkpoint on their own, only to be needed to be picked up further down the route. And another runner, who was picked up by a SAG vehicle, should have been referred to EVAC for pickup due to the severity of the runner's medical issue. This incident will be studied by the Amateurs Administration and medical staff for protocols review and improvement for next year. The final key point that came out of this year's marathon was simple. The separation of special services, SAG, water, medical, and control made it easier to achieve one of the best marathons run yet in Oklahoma City. Planning before the event and a thorough review and anticipation of possible problems were also very helpful. Two things hold true for this and any other incident, event, or exercise. First, you can never plan for all contingencies, but you can try. And second, you can never have too many radio operators. Thanks to Carl Rod, AB1IG in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, for this fine report. It's time once again for repeaters to identify. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is the ARRL Aries Audio e-letter for July 20th, 2016. And finally, we have letters. A proposal for an Aries standard headset. Tom Tengden, WB9VXY, in San Luis Obispo, California, wrote, in response to a letter from Douglas McCray, K2QWQ, in the June 2016 issue of QST Magazine, and a study by the San Luis Obispo, California Emergency Communications Council, the Council has put forth a proposal for an Aries standard headset connector. As an example of a good Aries standard, the Aries Racy's standard PowerPole DC connector is now well understood, accepted, and used in the field. Also, there are a number of time-tested, well-accepted standard RF connectors on the back panels of our radios. These are the female SO239 and the male PL259, or UHF connector, on the ends of our HF coax. But as Mr. McCray points out, what about the microphone? This is the most complicated connector to standardize, so it's not surprising that it's the last. But can we do it? There are lots of different microphone connectors in use in the field. Some are easy to obtain, such as the RJ series connector, while others are more difficult to come by. There is a wide range of audio levels to consider. These range from about minus 60 dBm to about minus 20 dBm. Further complicating things is that there are several different push-to-talk, or PTT, schemes. Some mic elements need power, some don't, and some mics have lots of extra functions. I'm asking your readers and listeners for feedback. You may email me at wb9vxy@arrl.net with your suggestions. Now I'll repeat Tom's email address. It is wb9vxy@arrl.net. Thank you. And thank you, Tom, for your interesting question. We hope you get lots of feedback. And that concludes the ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter for July 20th, 2016. The ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter is a monthly service of the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, the National Organization for Amateur Radio. The ARRL Aries Audio E-Letter is a voice version of the ARRL Aries E-Letter, compiled and written by Rick Palm, K1CE, in Daytona Beach, Florida. You may read the ARRL Aries E-Letter on the Internet at www.arrl.org/aries-el and click on the issue that you'd like to read. I'll repeat that URL. It's www.arrl.org/aries-el and click on the issue you'd like to read. To learn more about amateur radio, or to get the latest in amateur radio news, please visit us on the web at arrl.org. You may also find us on Facebook or Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have any questions about amateur radio in general, or the ARRL, you may also write us via snail mail at ARRL, 225 Main Street, Newington, Connecticut, 06111. Or you may give us a toll-free call at 1-888-277-5289. We are always happy to help answer your questions, and you need not be an ARRL member. Our thanks to this month's contributors. My audio script editor is Al Brown, KZ3AB in Laurel, Maryland. And I'm Tony Riggs, W1FHN, reporting from Lanham, Maryland. Copyright 2016 ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio. All rights reserved. Thanks for listening, and 73.